Hello and welcome. You've tuned into Active Listening with T4 Tactics. I'm Marco Galbraith, your host, and our podcast is all about personal success and networking. We'll discuss small business tips, health and wellness issues, personal safety tips, financial gain, and a variety of other topics from professionals in the field. And once in a while, we'll throw in our area of expertise, firearm safety and active shooter response for businesses, churches, and schools. So sit back, relax, listen and learn. Active Listening with T4 Tactics. Welcome back to another episode of Active Listening with T4 Tactics. Today is Monday, October 23rd, 2023. It is 2 p.m. And I've got Nimi here from Venezuela.
Yes.
Hi, welcome. Everybody. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So she took one of my classes last week. And we were talking about the border, we're talking about Venezuela and other issues, and I thought she's going to be an interesting person to do a podcast with because she's been there, done that. So you just tell me about yourself.
Yeah, I was born and raised in Venezuela, in the capital, Caracas. Mom and dad live there. None of my family really has adventure aboard. Because of the situation, political and social situation in Venezuela, that started about 20 years ago, my dad made a difficult decision to move to the United States. He came here to pursue a career in business. And I stayed in Venezuela with my mother. They're now separated. I have siblings on both sides and just really focused on finishing my high school diploma there. And eventually the situation in my country just continued to worsen, and I, you know, made the decision also to move here.
What did you see in Venezuela worse? What did your dad see and what did you see comparing to the United States? Are you seeing what's happening now in the United States? Is that what happened in Venezuela? Or what started the deterioration?
Yeah, I think when I compare the United States to Venezuela, a lot of people raise their eyebrows and they just, you know, say, oh, no, that's not going to happen here.
Right. Denial.
And I think it's important to go back into the facts. And, you know, back in the 80s, Venezuela was the richest country in all South America.
Yeah.
So really it was the United States, you know, of our side of the globe. And it just, I do see a change. It took 20 years. It was not it was not a fast transition. It took 20 years for my country to get into the shape that it is now. And I see in the United States a lot of the patterns repeating. Growing up, early in the process, there was a lot of, you know, push for this populist ideas of healthcare, free healthcare, free college, and things like that that now I see in the United States, you know, giving up your right to bear arms, that all happened there, and we allowed it.
Yeah.
Right? Because in paper, obviously, oh, of course I want, you know, more benefits. Of course I want to go to college for free.
Right.
But you don't see the other side, right? Is it sustainable?
Yeah.
And I see the United States pushing the same agenda, and I know it's like a is that the buzzword that people use, but it truly feels like a deja vu. And my biggest fear is just going through this hell again that I left.
That you left.
Yeah. And I don't like to say escape from because I came here to thrive.
Right.
But it was a really bad experience.
Right. Yeah. So when I have a friend, Walt, that builds the AR-15s, and he says quite often, America won't die, sounds like Venezuela, America won't die from a stab wound, we're going to die from a bunch of small cuts that are eventually going to get infected, and then it'll be the end.
Yeah, let me tell you something that it's funny to me. My dad was already living here in the United States. I used to visit him to get used to the language and, you know, just like spend time with him. And I remember that he had a lot of Cuban friends. And people from Cuba, they will basically tell Venezuela, be careful, be aware, you know, this is going to happen, the same thing that happened to us. And we had the same reactions that now Americans have.
That's right. It's not going to happen. You're crazy.
Oh, it's not going to happen.
We have a constitution.
Venezuela has so much oil. You guys are just an island.
Right.
And look at us now.
Yeah.
So I think that always sticks in my mind, because I always feel almost offended that people even, you know, like refer to Venezuela as the next Cuba.
Yeah. So when you, for people that don't know, what's Venezuela like right now?
So I can't say what it is right now. This is just for what I get from my family. Like I said, my mom still lives there. I haven't visited Venezuela since I left. It's really difficult for me to come back because
I am. And you came here 2012.
Yes, 2012. Yeah. I am an American citizen. I have, you know, my American passport, so it's difficult for me to return and visit. But it is very unstable. There's shortage of, you know, medicine, food, a lot of crime. And it is now, you know, we have our own currency, but now because of the inflation, it's out of control. They use dollars.
Right.
Which is ironically funny because the president back then used to demonize dollars and capitalism.
Right, yeah.
But when I left, the situation was boiling over. I could see really like the danger of staying there. And it was, you know, back when all of the protests were, you know, gaining momentum and people were going out in the streets. And that didn't amount to anything because we don't have weapons. So they took it from us.
Right.
So they're shooting at us and we're basically defending ourselves with rocks.
But you did have weapons at one time.
Yes, we did.
And they took them.
They did.
Yeah, yes. The government.
The government did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now they own you.
Absolutely. And they use the same, the same idea of, you know, it's dangerous for citizens to have weapons. We had a...
Because we can't control you.
Yeah, exactly.
But they won't say that.
They wouldn't say that, exactly.
Yeah.
I do remember that we had a very public active shooter.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, they used that.
What we do here.
It's not...
You and I are decent law-abiding gun owners, but whenever there's an active shooter, we get attacked. And I had nothing to do with it. You got nothing to do with it. Yeah.
And I think that people, need to understand that you as a citizen that follows the law, mm-hmm. you're going to surrender your weapon.
Right.
But the criminals are not going to follow the same thing.
No.
So now if you go to Venezuela, all of the gangs have military-grade weapons. You see the videos. They have bazookas. They have, you know, like M14s. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
M4.
So you came over here in 2012. Your dad had already done the process of being here legally and becoming a productive citizen. He's got a job, a career. So now you come over. Walk through the process of how you did it the correct way, the right way.
Yeah, so I had, like, again, visited my dad a couple of times. We had talked to an immigration attorney, and really walked us through the process of what's going to take, fingerprints, you know, like the different appointments and things like that. Coming to the United States, I had a tourist visa, but because I had started a legal process, I was still following basically the law.
Mm-hmm.
So I overstayed my visa under the legal process because I had an alien number. And there's just like, this is an intricate process, but basically if I were to get pulled over and I overstay my visa, but I'm already working with an immigration attorney and I have my case ongoing, they wouldn't be able to send me back to Venezuela. So that's the difference between crossing the border illegally, which you will be quote unquote illegal, which is a word that people don't like to use anymore. But there is a difference between illegal and being undocumented. So I was undocumented for a while I waited for my paperwork.
Because anything with the federal government is going to be completely jacked up. It's every time I had to deal with either the IRS or whoever it is, I just pull my hair out because they tend to be so unorganized.
Yeah.
It's very frustrating. Any federal government, healthcare, whatever it is. It was
a long process.
How much was it? You said it was expensive.
It was about $4,000.
Yeah.
And I had to wait around a year and a half.
Yeah.
So it was really, it was difficult, you know, the culture shock, not being able to go to college, not being able to work because I was waiting for my documents. But it's something that I had to go through. Mm-hmm. I didn't expect, you know, jumping through the hoops.
Right.
My dad early on really ingrained in my mind, you have to work hard.
Mm-hmm.
You need to follow the law.
Mm-hmm.
You are not a citizen. If you don't do this, you will get, you know, kicked out.
Yeah.
So I think I had a good start, a good foundation of what it was expected from me. And
right.
I really just adhered to the practices here in the United States. I didn't want to, you know, follow the mindset of my country.
Right.
Which is very disorganized, right?
Yeah, yeah,
like, even, like,
yeah.
driving laws and things like that.
Yeah.
And as a teenager, I just wanted to make sure that I follow everything and,
yeah.
like, you know, maintain the status that I just got.
Yeah, yeah. Because you don't want to be looking over your shoulder, you know? You got to get in trouble. So when you got your citizenship, you went into the military.
Yes, I was. I graduated high school very early.
Mm-hmm.
I was only 15, turning 16.
Wow.
So I expedited my high school process. And when I got to America, there was a lot of things that I didn't understand.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that education was so expensive.
Yeah.
So of course, the first thing that I do when I get my papers is get a job. I had two, actually.
Right.
So I was a waitress and I worked at a mall. I had two jobs and I was trying to go to school. I go to school and of course they're, hey, this is the amount of money that we're requesting
uh-huh.
for tuition.
Uh-huh.
Sign here. Oh, you don't have the money. Okay. You can call your dad and he can co-sign you. And even though I was never exposed to the system here, I'm just not dumb. Like, I'm
yeah,
not going to
say,
you know, sign my life away in debt. So
yeah.
I just kind of try to find other resources, and I found someone, an American person. She was a family friend, and that's someone that I really emulate, and
yeah.
very hardworking, and she was in the military as a captain, and kind of talked to, you know, to me about all of the benefits and things like that. So I ended up joining the Army,
mm-hmm.
active duty. I have one deployment under the belt, and it was just the best decision that I made.
Yeah.
That expedited my immigration process. I didn't
right.
have to wait 5 years after having my green card. I was able to become a citizen upon basic training graduation. And yeah, like I...
And a lot of American-born citizens do the same thing. So
yeah.
we don't want people to think, well, you know, somebody from Venezuela can come get all these benefits. I've got friends, American-born friends, that did the same thing.
Yeah.
So the benefits are there. Take them. So
right.
there's nothing wrong with that.
Right. And I really had to earn it. Like,
yeah,
I had
absolutely.
To, another thing that I want to make sure that people don't get confused, and especially if I, you know, people are listening, they're from other countries. I didn't join the military to have my papers. I already had a green card.
Yeah.
I really joined because I was proud
uh-huh.
to be here.
Yeah.
I wanted to serve, and I definitely wanted those educational benefits. And I just used it to the best of my abilities, and I really, really took advantage of that.
Right.
Yeah.
Which everybody should.
Yeah.
Why not? Yeah. So you got out of the military. Did you meet your husband in the military?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Yes. We were both active duty.
Yep. And you just moved from Hawaii.
Yeah.
to Lynchburg, Virginia.
I know.
What are you thinking? Yeah.
I know.
But we've talked. I mean,
yeah.
and people know Hawaii is so far left. It's beautiful.
Beautiful.
And I've been to Kauai a couple times, 5 times, but yeah, beautiful, but
yeah.
very left. So yeah, that's culture. Was it culture shock going from Hawaii to here?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I mean, when you see the price difference, I think
yeah.
I forgot about everything.
Right, right, yeah.
I was very excited to be here
yeah.
and actually be able to, you know, like, get high quality groceries. I mean, Hawaii is just... the prices are astronomical. It's the
yeah.
price that you pay for paradise. And I'm happy with the transition, really.
Yeah.
yeah.
What did you guys do for recreation? Did you hike or did you snorkel? Or
yeah.
what did you do?
Yeah, we did both. I really got into snorkeling towards the end of
That's
my
all
stay
I
want
to do, go to Hawaii. It's like
yeah.
snorkeling and drinking water in bottled water. It's so clear.
Yeah.
The visibility. Yeah.
Yeah, but I hiked a lot. I really liked it, but we're ready for the next adventure for
yeah.
sure. Yeah.
So you're in this area now. You're both in... school, college,
yes.
yeah.
Yes.
And so after 2 years, you may be getting out of this area.
Yes.
And we talked about your future plans.
Mm-hmm.
They sound very promising.
Yeah.
Yeah, you
got
to focus. So we kind of wanted to do this podcast because I wanted to let people know that there are a ton of good people
mm-hmm.
coming from Venezuela, coming from Mexico, from other countries, and they want to come here to work hard and have a life. sometimes we get, I think we get jaded sometimes that it's all bad people coming, you know, and it, and there are a lot and so tell me what you said about, you know, what's coming across the border right now from Venezuela.
Well, I want to preface by saying that, you know, of course, this is my opinion, but we're in such a polarized situation now in the country. And I just like to invite people to just be open-minded.
Right.
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 Because I, for me personally, I don't like being in an echo chamber.
Yeah.
But, you know, what I've seen and, you know, this is my experience is that a lot of the people from Venezuela, you know, that were college educated, that had their, they had their practices there, doctors, attorneys, you know, they really left a long time ago.
They saw it coming.
They saw it coming. They had the means, they had the, you know, the resources to leave, and it just came in waves.
Yeah.
What I've seen happening lately is that a lot of the Venezuelans that are crossing the border right now are just the same people that I fear growing up.
Yeah.
Right?
Why and, the people that made you pretty much leave.
Right, yeah. Right. And not to say that it is everybody, because it's not.
Right, it's not.
I know people that are crossing the border that I know personally, that I know that are good people, they have great work ethic. I just think that it's about a safety.
Yeah.
Right, safety measure to vet the people that are entering, who really is entering the country, and people really get caught into all of the, oh, well, like, anybody can be here, we're all the same. But I want to digress and take it to simpler terms.
Right.
In your home, will you leave the door open?
Exactly.
Or would you just walk in?
Right.
So that's really what I say to people when they start telling me this. And I listen to what they have to say about immigration, and they almost get offended because I am an immigrant. But all I have to say is that please be the first person to take an immigrant right now from the border and take it to your home.
Right.
Let me know when that happens.
Yeah.
I have never
An
answer back.
No, they're right.
So
everybody that's open border is not going to be the people that say, well, come stay at my house.
Yeah.
And I'm all for people coming to America as long as they do it like you did. Vetted. And then, of course, come over and lead a good life, you know, work and toe the line. I personally have no problem with people come into our country as long as they're decent people. We don't need terrorists and criminals crossing that border.
Yeah, it shouldn't be an emotional topic, because
right.
I think that when you make it emotional, it really makes people feel some type of way. It's about the facts. And honestly, looking at, you know, I've studied other cultures like Japan, and their immigration process is so rigid because their politicians and their elected officials have the responsibility to safeguard that population.
Right. I've heard the same thing.
Yeah,
they're very tough. Yeah.
Very tough. In Japan, that you are even born in Japan doesn't mean that you're a citizen.
Yeah.
You have to live there 5 consecutive years. You have to have, you know, a good record. Even if you've ever spoken against the Japanese government or had some type of outburst like socially that was documented, that automatically puts you into scrutiny of like what type of people are we letting, you know, become a citizen. So I don't think it should be emotional,
right?
And it's not just America. I think we're pretty lenient now, and it continues to, I mean, hopefully this changes. The other countries that do the same thing, and it's really to keep the people safe.
Yeah.
Nothing else.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So what country are we going to next when America falls?
Oh, God.
I know. You know? I worry so much that we're spinning. I think of a plane on fire with one wing, and we're just spinning out of control.
Yeah. Socialism really ruined Venezuela, and socialism, you know, even according to Marx, it's just a step towards communism. So
yeah.
I think in theory, it's perfect. It sounds amazing.
Right.
Why not?
Right.
But humans are egotistical. I think it's our nature. And when it comes to the practice, just like I saw it in my country, it just does not work. It is not sustainable.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. If you had a warning for America, what would you say?
I would say, be humble.
Yeah.
Right? Be humble into where we are.
Mm-hmm.
We're not the same America that we were 5, 10 years ago. and be humble and be able to compare what happens in other countries into what's happening now in our policies, and really be extremely careful who you're voting. It's really easy to vote someone in. The damage that they do, it's tremendous, and it's really hard to vote them out.
Yeah.
At least that's how it was in my country.
Yeah. And we're seeing that now. It's hard to vote them out. You know, and we can go on forever about, does the voting process, is it secured? Is it,
this can be a whole other episode
exactly.
of so, how we saw fraud, you know, in front of our face every time we voted.
Yeah.
We had, when we switched into the electronic votes, we started seeing the fraud happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of like what I, you know, see here.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it is too.
Yeah.
And I think it is. It's anything electronic is... I learned in my police career, anything wireless or electronic is subject to manipulation.
Yes.
And it's subject to interception.
Absolutely.
So, you know, anything you text, anything, people have a Signal app and they think it's secure. You know, it's encrypted. Well,
Not really.
Yeah. If the U.S. military can unencrypt messages between China military, then I think somebody can unencrypt the Signal app.
Yeah.
And people get too comfortable. Anything else you want to add?
I do have this, it's kind of like an example that I give to people when we think about, the policies that are being implemented here in the United States, especially with taxing.
Yeah.
In Venezuela, we get fed the same, kumbaya, let's tax the rich. And we fell for it.
Right.
And we thought this was the greatest thing. It was sustainable for about a year.
Mm-hmm.
But when you are stealing money, you're a very corrupt politician, and then you have, let's just say here that they want to tax the rich and cover, free healthcare and, loan repayment. All of that money, it's not going to be sustainable. It's not going to be enough.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened in Venezuela. So after the second year, they really started touching the middle class.
Right.
So I grew up in poverty. I grew up in one of the worst neighborhoods in Venezuela. And when I was around 12 years old, we kind of got into like a better situation. Venezuelan culture is very collective. So my whole family had an apartment near the beach. So we had a home in the city and then an apartment that it was owned kind of by the family, right? Because we didn't have money to each of us have our own apartment.
Right.
But it was, just kind of like a, hey, I have it this weekend, we have it that weekend. And out of nowhere, the government basically left a note saying that just because we have a home in the city, they were going to take that, that land.
Wow.
So they
because you have with, two,
because you
we're
going to
take one. You only need one.
Right. You only need one. And we're going to give it to people that don't have a home.
But we're seeing that now.
And it's, it shows you how it touched and affected middle class.
Yeah.
And we were, not even middle class, I would say. It was, we worked for that. My family worked for that.
Right.
We owned that and it took us years to pay and they just took it. And it's not a, an individual experience. A lot of Venezuelans went through this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you see, our government likes to divide people. They like to divide LGBTQ. They like to stir the pot. They like to divide the blacks against the whites. Did you see division? Did they hit that like the United States is doing it? Division amongst people?
Mm-hmm. When it's a little different than the United States, yes, there was divisions to answer the question. Chavez, which is back in the 90s, the little... Castro's puppet, really. He's now dead, but his legacy did so much damage that we're still suffering the consequences of it. But Chavez was, very smart in the sense he would basically censor international channels channels that they would have, you know, news, again, basically highlighting everything that the government was doing.
Yeah.
You know, had that rhetoric like against the government. So it was very controlled. So what he would do now that everybody had the same channels, the same information filter, he would interrupt the program. So you would be sitting at home, you know, watching a movie, and he would interrupt and just talk for hours and talk and talk and talk.
Wow.
And, you know,
during prime time when everybody's watching, it's the best show and I'm going to talk. Wow.
And, you know, people without money and the impoverished, you know, communities, they don't have cable. They don't have anything else. So they start eating that up.
Right.
And, you know, the speeches were so hateful. They were very anti-American. Mm-hmm. They were, you know, just socialism, communism aimed. And it did create a lot of hate between people that have money and that don't.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah.
And when you start hearing it enough, like our news media outlets, when you start hearing the
propaganda,
you start believing it. That's
you
right.
Believe it.
It's
Absolutely.
Just like somebody that lies a lot, when they tell the same lie, they'll start believing it.
Yes.
They actually believe it happened.
Yes.
And yeah.
So you will go, you know, in Venezuela, you know, if you had some money, people would legitimately like hate you.
Yeah.
Right? Instead of like, wow, like I want to be like that person.
Right.
It, you know, I didn't see it, like you said, in that racial aspect, but I do see it happening here. And all you can do right now is just turn off the news.
Right.
Really, that, turn off the news.
That's right. Because, or if you see something on the news, then go research it and find out what really happened.
Exactly.
Because you can look at NBC, ABC, Fox, CBS, all these MSNBC, CNN, you can look at all these news stations. They're basically saying the same thing.
The same thing.
And I feel like they get an email and they say, this is what we want you to say and this is how you're going to say it.
Yeah.
And you have to look beyond that. You've got to look at the other part of the story.
Absolutely.
For sure. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Wow. Spoken from someone that's been there, done that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I appreciate you coming in.
Absolutely.
So you've got 2 more years to finish your degree.
Yes, 2 more
If anybody's hiring, please contact me and I will get you in touch with her. This girl is definitely dialed in. Military experience, getting your bachelor's?
No, my master's.
Master's. And level. what's the bachelor's in?
Criminal justice.
Okay, and what's the master's going to be?
I'm still, you know, thinking about it.
But you're getting it.
Legal.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And so once your husband finishes, you guys will be able to travel. You'll be able to go wherever you want in the United States. As far as like for jobs,
the military.
Okay.
Because he's going to remain active.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's wherever they send us next.
There you go. All right. Well, if anybody's hiring, contact me. I'll get you in touch with this amazing girl. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
It's been good. All right. You've been listening to Active Listening with T4 Tactics. You can follow us on our website. You can like and share this podcast and subscribe to it for more. You guys have a good day. Reduce injuries and save lives. Take care.